This podcast may contain references to violence, explicit material, or sexual abuse, and may be disturbing for some listeners.
Criminals leave digital footprints all the time. My job is to find them. I'm Senior Constable Grant Hazel from Digital Forensics. I specialise in vehicle system forensics for the Western Australian Police Force. I can get a lot of information about you from your car. It's a witness that doesn't forget and doesn't lie. And you're about to hear the story of a crim, his car, its computer, and all the clues.
Standoff is at an end.
This is Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast.
Hello, I'm Sandra Di Girolamo. If you're up to no good, how much information do you think the police can find out about you from the things you use? I think most of us know they can find out a lot by looking through our phones or computers if we're in trouble. But what information can they get from our car? If you're not a cop, then what you're about to hear will probably surprise you, but it's pretty cool. This is a side of policing the WA police very rarely speak about, and there's a really good reason for that. We are going inside the digital forensics unit, all the tech. I'm here with a very clever man, Senior Constable Grant Hazel. Grant, hi. You and I have already had a bit of a chat before we started recording, so I know what you're about to talk about, and I know it's something that you don't normally talk about openly, right?
That's correct.
Why?
Because some of the methods that we have available to us and some of the data that we can get is quite deep, it's quite lengthy, it can be quite incriminating for the criminal. So we don't like to talk about exactly what we can get for obvious reasons.
You don't want them to know how you do it.
Because they'll find a ways around it and find avoidance strategies, and that's what we don't want.
And that's the thing, you always need to keep one step ahead, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly, we try.
Before we talk about that car, that cream, that computer,
sure.
I want to know from you, what is digital forensics?
So digital forensics is the process of identifying, acquiring, and then analysing data from digital evidence sources. So most commonly computers, mobile devices, things like CCTV units, thumb drives, SD cards, anything that's capable of retaining data is something that's going to be of interest to us.
Within your unit, and here's the really cool bit, you've got a really specialised skill. What do you do?
So I specialise in vehicle system forensics. So it's a relatively new capability for the WA Police. And whenever a crime is involved, typically it involves a vehicle. And because crooks get about in cars. So wherever they go, they leave some kind of digital footprint.
So what kind of information can a car give someone like you?
So much. Primarily where a car has been. So the GPS data is always something which is really important. So whenever you go into your car, some cars will log your geolocation or your GPS data simply by you manually inputting a location.
Uh-huh.
So I want to go from home to the Crown Casino, and it will log that information. There are some cars that store that information autonomously without any user input. So that's quite surprising to people.
So the car can tell, even if I haven't put it in Google Maps in my phone, the car can still tell you that I went from, you know, my house to
yours. It can. So certain cars will, for instance, they may log what we call trails or track logs. So when you get in your car in the morning and you go from home to Coles, for instance, that would be trail A. When you go from Coles to the gym, that would be trail B. Gym to work, trail C. So we can recover that information and that can be incredibly useful.
And that's stored in the computer of the car. What else is stored in that computer?
So a car's more complex than what people think. It's made up of multiple computers, sometimes more than 100. They're called electronic control units. And each one of those performs a different function. So one might be responsible for your electric windows. The other one might be responsible for lights.
Right.
But the system that we're focused on the most is the infotainment and the telematic system, which is basically the screen that you see in front of you when
right.
you get into the car.
You're not interested in the computer that controls my windows, but you are interested in that screen that you can see. So apart from where I've been, what else can that computer tell you?
We can get things like if a door has been opened. Whether it's the driver's door or the passenger door.
You can tell which door in the car has been opened.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when?
With a degree of accuracy, with a time and date stamp, which is derived from the GPS data.
That's cool. That's super cool.
It's really awesome.
And what about if I plug my phone into the car, can you get any other data from my phone?
We can. So not only identify the phone and can then identify it to you, it can bring things up like contacts and call logs and maybe SMSs that have been sent as well.
You can tell who I've called.
Can tell who you've called. So you can see how incriminating that could be.
Have we just said too much? Are they going to make me edit all this out? That's, wow, okay. You can tell a lot of information from a car. And so this is all stored within those 100 or so computers within a car.
It is. So this information that we've just spoken about, so your GPS stuff and your call logs and SMS stuff and vehicle events, we call them, which is speeds and car door openings and stuff like that, it's stored within small chips that are in the computer behind the screen that you touch and you look at every single time you get into your car.
And for you, I suppose, in your position, this is the witness that doesn't lie. The car is the witness that doesn't lie.
It is. Well, if it's there, it's there. So if there's a GPS route in there or if there's a connected device or if a phone call has been made, then somebody needs to answer to those things to explain why that phone was connected, why that call was made, and be able to come up with an account to explain why a vehicle was at a certain position. And because it relies on the global positioning system.
GPS.
It's true. It's factual. It's proven.
What if I don't plug my phone in? Does it work for Bluetooth as well?
It can work with Bluetooth as well.
I'm here with Senior Constable Grant Hazel from WA Police Digital Forensics. These are the guys who are taking apart computers and all things digital. Grant, let's get to the story you spoke about off the top, the crim, his car and the computer. How does the story start for you?
It actually started on a day off. I was at home. We had a phone call to say there'd been a serious incident. There was a vehicle involved. The vehicle had been involved in a pursuit. Half the WA police force were chasing this vehicle in order to try and get it stopped. It'd been involved in a serious incident 1 or 2 days before this particular day. It was on a Sunday.
Serious incident being?
It'd been involved in an incident related to a homicide.
Okay. Serious incident, as you say. All right. So there's a high-speed chase. What happens?
There's a high-speed chase. The vehicle was seen initially around the city. It proceeded north on Mitchell Freeway. It's gone into some suburbs. It's then gone back down south. And the vehicle's been stopped and the suspects have been apprehended in around the Northbridge area.
So the car's gone up the Mitchell Freeway one way, down the Mitchell Freeway, doing a million miles an hour, I'm sure.
Yep.
Police managed to stop this car somehow.
Yep.
I assume they get the, let's call him the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I assume they get the bad guy. He goes off to the police station.
Yep.
They're questioning him over, as you said before, some homicide.
Mm.
Is he talking to them?
He isn't saying a lot. No. Typically, people involved in crime of this nature, they're not typically going to talk.
So you need a more reliable witness.
So we need a more reliable witness. We hope that the car would be a reliable witness in regards to the crook's actions.
What's the first thing you do?
So we look up the make and model of the vehicle. And upon doing so on that day, I was really confident I was going to be able to help and be able to give corroborative evidence in regards to the vehicle's actions on that day.
Now, while you're doing this, the physical forensics are already out at the car. What are they doing?
So typically, we're all under the same forensic umbrella. Physical forensics will go first because they'll investigate the vehicle initially because they're looking for things like fingerprints, maybe any blood, any other evidence that may be of a physical forensic nature.
I suppose that's the difference between the physical and the digital forensics. They get, the physical forensics guys get so much more attention than you, don't they? You know, no one's making TV shows about pulling computers apart, are they?
No, which is good because it helps us stay out of the limelight and we can just get on with our work.
Now, once the physical forensics guys have got their fingerprints and done the rest of the stuff, is the car at this point, where's the car?
It was seized from the scene. So when the pursuit ended, No physical forensic or digital forensic examination ideally is going to take place out in the public domain. So it's going to be seized, it'll be taken to a secure location, it'll be towed, and once it's there, the forensic procedures can then start taking place.
So the car is in this location that I'm guessing you're not going to tell me where it is. By the look on your face, I don't think you're going to tell me where the location is, but once you're there and you get the green light, what's the first thing you do?
We turn up and conduct an assessment from the vehicle externally. So take a series of photographs.
What are you looking for?
We want to confirm that the registration's correct, the VIN, which is the vehicle identification number, make sure that's present on the vehicle. So we need to be confident that the vehicle we're looking at is the vehicle that it purports to be. We then want to make sure that there is a system within the vehicle. So I'll open the doors and I'll visually inspect the computer or the screen to make sure it is what I expect it to be. Once I can visually inspect it and confirm that it is the particular system that's fully supported, I can then move on to the next stage of the investigation.
And I'm guessing you don't just yank that computer out next. What happens next?
Sometimes we do, probably a little bit more subtle than that. It really depends on the vehicle, but this particular one did require a full system removal. So we have to go in with an array of different tools and carefully remove the centre console and elements of the dashboard to then expose the system and then remove the system in situ whilst we go taking photographs of everything so it can all be put back as we found it.
Why is it important to do this so carefully and methodically?
It has to be done so carefully and methodically because we don't want to make any changes to the evidence. We don't want to disturb things. We want to try and preserve things in situ as much as we can. So just comparing it to a physical forensic crime scene, if you had a stabbing or something like that and there was a pool of blood and there was a knife there, you wouldn't just walk through the pool of blood and pick up the knife and seize it and take it back. You know, you would approach it carefully. You would do things methodically. If someone did have to do that, recover the knife, then it would only be done once and hopefully only one person doing it. So as fewer changes as possible is going to be made to the evidence. You're not disturbing it more than what you need to, because ultimately all this stuff plays out in court. So we need to demonstrate what we've done. There needs to be a chain of custody when it comes to evidence, which is detailing exactly the steps that were taken from scene attendance to identifying evidence to then removing evidence from the scene and then further processing the evidence. And the same goes with data. So if something contains data like a car does or a phone does, you don't want to start turning the car on and interacting with the screen. You don't want to turn a phone on and start opening apps and reading messages. The same applies with a computer. You don't want to start turning it on, closing files, turning the computer off, because each and every time you do that, you're making some kind of subtle change. And you also might be overwriting data. And if you overwrite data, it might be the critical data that's of vital importance to the particular investigation.
So even turning the car on, something as simple as turning the car on could change something for what you need?
It could. Once you turn the car on, all those computers are kicking in, so to speak. So they start recording data and they start overwriting data.
Is this why on the news we see pictures all the time of police walking out of houses holding computers or cars being towed because they don't want to turn them on there? They want to bring them to your office.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It has to be done that way. If we want the best evidential outcomes, then things need to be preserved in their most original state. We attend warrants to give guidance, whether it be from a drugs and firearms warrant or we attend homicide scenes just to give that on-site guidance about how best to preserve and seize digital evidence to get the best possible outcome.
Oh, so you might go there with the homicide squad,
sure,
as an example,
yep,
and say to them, look, don't touch that computer. This is how to ferry this around. This is what I need you to do so I can get the data. That's quite a normal thing in your role.
Exactly right. It is.
You're listening to Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast. If you want to be part of the action, visit letsjoinforces.wa.gov.au to find out more.
I'm here with Senior Constable Grant Hazel from WA Police Digital Forensics. These are the guys taking apart computers and all things digital. So in this case, you pull the car apart and get to the computer, then what?
So we pulled the car apart, we get to the computer. This particular case, there was a hard drive that needed to be removed from the computer, and that hard drive was what contained all the data. It can sometimes be a mystery box when it comes to storage devices, because we don't know if the data has been corrupted in some way. We don't know exactly what the vehicle has logged. We don't know what devices have been connected to it.
And so what did you find?
So with this one, we found some excellent GPS data, which pinpointed the vehicle's location and speed at the relevant times and dates that the incident occurred.
So the GPS data could tell you where the car was, and you could then tell the homicide guys. Was it helpful? Had it been where they thought it might have been?
It had. The GPS data, it perfectly corroborated the eyewitness accounts by the police. But there was a time when the vehicle was out of sight, because the velocity logs, which we managed to obtain from the vehicle as well, so to find out how fast the vehicle was going, it put the vehicle at about 250 kilometres an hour on the Mitchell Freeway at 1:15 in the afternoon.
Whoa! That's crazy speed.
It is.
Imagine being on the freeway. Was that during the police pursuit?
That was during the police pursuit.
Whoa!
And it then, further to that, it put the vehicle, it turned off for the freeway and it went into some suburbs. And it went into the suburb and into the particular street where evidence had been discarded, and that evidence was subsequently found.
When you say that evidence, what was it?
It was firearms.
So the car had driven to a place, dropped off some firearms, and your data was able to locate those firearms,
yeah.
which I suppose does two things. One, takes those firearms off the street,
mm-hmm.
and secondly, could lead to more serious charges against the guy who's not speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. So the firearms have then been located for evidential purposes. They could have then been linked to further crimes, and then some serious charges resulted from the discovery of those firearms.
And all of that data then obviously gets passed on to the investigations team. In this case, it was homicide,
yeah.
And used against this guy in court.
Yeah. It can add so much value to an investigation. Sometimes GPS data is that crucial. There might not be any other witnesses that can provide that eyewitness account. Yeah, I saw a vehicle here. Or there might not be CCTV that can confirm that a vehicle was in a certain location. It might well be that we rely on that information from the system in order to pinpoint a vehicle's location, which can be of vital importance to any investigation.
I'm imagining your team all sitting behind a bank of computers all day, or with their screwdrivers, taking computers apart. Is that what it looks like? What does digital forensics look like?
It can look like that sometimes. We have a computer lab, which is pretty much like you've just described, has a few banks of computers, and you have people there with screwdrivers taking computers apart. We then have a phone lab where we do the same thing, but with phones. So we find that computers are now becoming less common and phones are more common, because everyone has sometimes at least one phone. It's amazing how much we use our phones. They become an extension of us. We'll maybe message and we'll take photographs and we'll do things on our phone without even thinking. They do really become an extension of you and your personality.
They can tell you a lot about someone.
They can. So, and then we have a vehicle systems lab as well, and we have an audio-visual team that focus on CCTV.
Are you all tech geeks?
Some. You have some guys that can stare at a screen for hours and just watch all this data coming down on the screen like something from the Matrix. But I think, like with anything, if you want to be good at something, I think you have to enjoy it.
What about with your specialty, though, with cars?
Mm.
Do you have to have a good background in cars? Do you need to be a mechanic? Or what skills do you need to be able to specialise in vehicle forensics?
Mm. It helps. I was in the military for 6 years before the police, and I was a recovery mechanic. So I always had an interest in cars. Even at home, I'd conduct repairs on my car. So I knew my way about cars and knew what they did and what the components do and things like that.
If I was a tech expert, and I'm not, and anyone who knows me well will know that I'm not, if I was a tech expert, why wouldn't I go work for one of the big technology companies? Why wouldn't I go work for Google or something like that? Why would I work for the police?
If you go to private industry, sure, you can make some money, but I'd suggest you're pretty much doing the same thing day in, day out, working for a big corporation. I don't think any of us join the police force in order to make money. This for the greater good, and simply by virtue of your skills and maybe looking at things with a degree of depth, you might be able to uncover evidence and put the investigation on a completely different upwards trajectory.
You've been a cop for a long time. I know you've worked overseas as well.
Mm-hmm.
digital forensics would have changed a lot in that time. I mean, did your job in vehicle forensics even exist when you first started in the force?
No, when I first started, we didn't all have mobile phones. So 22 years ago, it's not that long ago, really, but not everyone had a phone. There was only a couple of mobile phones around compared to now, where everyone has a phone, everyone has at least one car, and most people have at least one computer. So that tells a story in that regard. It's a challenging area. It's fast moving. It's hard to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to tech. It's no longer acceptable to be in the police force and have a complete ignorance of tech. You don't have to be completely competent, but you need to know what you're looking at, or probably more importantly, you need to know what not to do. So don't start touching things if you don't know the outcome. And that's the premise I always live by in digital forensics, especially at the beginning. Unless I know what happens when I push a button, don't push it. And I think that's quite sound advice to anyone who isn't completely au fait with tech, certainly if you're dealing with it in an evidentiary capacity.
I think we can all take that piece of advice in any part of our life. If you don't know what the button does, don't press it.
Leave it alone.
Great advice. Technology keeps getting better and better. Has law enforcement kept up? You know, are the good guys winning?
Eventually, yes. We are often behind the eight ball, because that's the way it is. You know, this new technology will come out, and digital forensic tools, hardware and software will come out to help us deal with the advancement in tech. It isn't the other way around. We don't get those advanced methodologies and equipment and then the tech's released. So we have to just keep ahead of the curve by upskilling our knowledge. And then as and when that tech crosses our desk, we have to hope that we have the correct equipment to be able to deal with it.
We don't normally hear police say that. That's a really realistic, I think, and honest response. I assume digital forensics as a specialty unit is going to continue to grow and grow as the technology advances further. And that probably means you're going to need more people on your side. So if you're listening to this and think it all sounds as fascinating as I do, if you fancy yourself a computer expert and you want to find out about the stuff that Grant wasn't allowed to tell me, get in touch with the WA Police and maybe they'll let you join Grant and his team. Grant, I will never open my car door again without thinking about all the information you now know about me. Thanks very much. Thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Until next time, I'm Sandra DiGirolamo. You've been listening to Persons of Interest, the WA Police podcast.
Thanks for listening to the WA Police podcast. You can keep listening to the action, or you can be part of it. Visit letsjoinforces.wa.gov.au to find out more.
The Persons of Interest podcasts have given a rare insight into real cases with real cops. If you've enjoyed listening, you can stay tuned for more WA Police Force podcasts. The second Cold Case Western Australia series is coming soon and will examine some enduring unsolved murders. This could be your chance to help solve these terrible crimes, so please listen and call Crime Stoppers if you have any information.